Hello, welcome to Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. This is Phyllis Furumoto, and we're going to continue this month, the month of September, with the teaching series that I'm doing. The background to this, in case we've lost the thread, is that it is my experience in traveling around to different countries that each country, each culture has its gift for Reiki, in the sense of when a master goes and teaches, there is something unique and interesting about the students that calls out in the master a challenge sometimes, and sometimes a feeling of being at home. At the same time, Reiki goes into a culture or a country and touches that culture and starts to change it. And I feel like, and starts to allow the humanness or our humanity to come forth. And in that humanity, there is a healing process that happens. And I feel like that thread has been running through the last four interviews. So if you want to go back and listen to them and get that thread, maybe that wasn't so obvious. I've traveled around and taught in many countries, Germany, Australia, England, the United States, Kazakhstan, Russia, and each of these countries have really given me something that I needed to learn for myself. And these came out of kind of the typical, we won't call stereotypes, but the typical characteristics of the culture that comes across, especially for those of us who are visitors. Of course, this hasn't happened before, but there is some consideration about whether or not this might be taken as a little bit of judgment, and it's not really. It's just, as a Reiki master, we're very sensitive to differences and sensitive to how the teachings are accepted and how they are expressed in the culture. And I find this to be fascinating because there are also things, along with the differences, that are totally the same. Just like Reiki, the word, is the same in every language. It is pronounced differently because in different languages, the R, for instance, has a very different sound in many languages, but the concept and the feeling and the experience of the initiation and of a Reiki treatment are definitely the same. And what that brings out in people is our individuality, both as people and also as a culture. So that's what we're investigating these days. Today I have with me Beatrice von Schlick. Some of you might remember her from the interviews that I've done before with her. Beatrice is a very interesting person. I've always loved her, and I've loved her facility with languages, mostly because she's lived in a lot of different places in the world. And right now she lives in Germany, but teaches a lot in France because that's really her native country. And Beatrice, I want to welcome you to the show.
Thank you.
And your willingness to share with us candidly and also lovingly about your experiences of teaching in two different countries that have, for the outsiders anyway, very different cultures. Like, for instance, one difference is that I love the bread in Germany, but it's hearty, wholesome, and finally, I get to know that you can really live on bread and water if you're in Germany. And in France, I love baguettes, but of course, in France, you must live on cheese and water. So,
and wine.
Oh, wait, cheese and wine, not yes, cheese and water.
Yeah.
So there we have a really wonderful difference, and it's a difference that occurs immediately when you cross the border.
Yes.
Yes?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. So welcome and thank you for coming.
Thank you, Phyllis, for asking me.
Yeah. So can you just say a little bit about your life? Because you have a very interesting background, I think, and that makes up for some of your that influences some of your observations, I think.
Yes, yes. I was born as a French person. My father was half Vietnamese. And my mother was sort of half from Austria. Well, her grandmother was from Austria. So I'm a mixture of different races. And my father being a military and later like diplomatic service, we moved all the time. So I don't really have, I have the French upraising and school and university, but we moved all the time. So I'm a bit of an expatriate anyway, and I never knew where my roots were. And so I studied languages, I studied English and literature, and wanted to become a teacher, and I fell in love with a German student. So that was quite a challenge for my parents. Well, not for my father. My father always, although he was military and had been in the war, of course, but he had a great respect for the Germans and the German literature and German culture and way of thinking, etc. He was always very positive. But my grandmother had been in, during the invasion of the Germans, was robbed and probably raped and had very, very bad experiences. My mom also had bad experiences. So half of the family was really not happy having me going to Germany. And so at that time, maybe for me, I mean, I loved my fiancé at that time. Or,
of course.
I loved him. So there was no point, I mean, no question of, you know, I had to go to Germany. But it was quite a burden also because of the resistance of half of my family thinking I was crazy and, you know, and having very bad, well, opinion of the Germans. So I was, you know, like between two worlds
yeah.
or so, and having to make my own opinion. And it was not always easy, you know, and the language was difficult for me and I had not much money, and but I was so much in love. So
love wins out.
So love wins out.
You're right. And, so what year was this?
72 or something. I'm 64 now.
Yeah.
71, 72.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah, I was a young woman.
So you followed your great love to Germany.
Yes, yes. And then he became a diplomat. So and that had not been my intention. You know, like I wanted to stay in one place. At that time, I thought, you know, that would be so lovely to stay just in one place and not move again. But he got very bored and he went into the diplomatic service, and then we started going to different places. And actually, I loved that also, of course. So we went to the Sudan. I lived almost 3 years in the Sudan. And then we went to Argentina, also 3 years, and then back to Germany. And then I met with Reiki. After my husband died, I mean, this was one of the reasons why I took Reiki, or why I fell in love with Reiki. It's just this feeling of, yeah, being home again and being held, because it had been a very, very bad, for me, a big tragedy to lose him.
Right, must have been, and it was quite sudden.
It was, well, not quite sudden. He had a brain tumor, but so he was sick for almost 2.5 years, but we were, you know, like trying. He was fighting, or he was, well, he said he was fighting. And we thought he had been healed, but actually he died of this brain tumor. But it came suddenly because he had been healed. He died because of, well, of an intervention that was not necessary. So it was like a big tragedy, and I was lost, you know, like not understanding the world anymore. But I wanted to stay in Germany because of him. You know, my love for him sort of is also my love for Germany. I see so many qualities in the Germans, and I had friends, of course, there, and I didn't want to leave them. And the language I love,
yes,
also. So, and I had a little kid, and I wanted her to be raised into French, I mean, with two languages, French and German, and with two cultures,
right.
It's important for me.
Right.
And I'm glad that I stayed there. And for a long while, well, Germany became, of course, my home. But still, I still have my French nationality. I never gave it up.
I see.
Yeah, yeah. No, this is very important. My identity, my nationality is French. And having a house also in the south of France, I would go back and forth. But I wanted to live in Germany and stay.
Uh-huh.
And when I started teaching, it was in Germany and also in France. But in France, it was my family first, my family, my friends. So these were people that I knew very much, very well. So it was not something special in the sense.
Yes.
It was special, but not like a different culture.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's only a few years later when I started giving classes and having someone organizing classes for me that I really understood, you know, how different it was and how rich it was for me also to go back to France and share what I had to share with them and also get back many things that I had lost. I mean, the language, for instance, you know, teaching the history of Reiki in French is so different than in German.
German.
And also the way the people receive it is different somehow.
Right, right. So, yeah. Well, it was really interesting because I had Upasana Grugan on some months ago, and she's an American and has lived in South America for, I think, several decades. And she came back, and I said, "Aren't you teaching Reiki?" And she said, "Well, I don't know how to teach because I don't know the English words." Yeah, and it sounds a little bit similar, that you relearn your language,
yes, exactly.
But in a different syntax. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was very interesting because I was so used to tell the story in German, and then finding the right words, etc. for
uh-huh.
me. And so it was discovery, and also it made me so happy because actually it's my mother tongue. I mean, it's my native language.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes it flows so quickly and so easily, etc. So it's really wonderful.
Mm.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit of the differences, if you can, about speaking it in the German language, the history, and then what happens with the students in your impression.
You mean in Germany then?
Yeah, in German. And then we'll go to French.
Yeah. Well, in German, I don't know. I mean, I live now almost 30 years in Germany, so it's easy. What I notice is that, you know, sometimes the people, I see that they have question marks all over the face. But I'm happy that they don't interrupt me mainly. They
right.
don't ask too many questions at the moment, so I can go on with telling the story. But sometimes I, you know, like, I see how they sort of have these question marks and how their brain seems to be working and how sometimes they take things in and sometimes I feel like it's over them. So
uh-huh.
it's, sometimes I myself, I'm not quite sure how much do they get and how much don't they get. And sometimes the Germans have learned to not to believe anything, you know, like not to believe the things too easily, you know, like to
right.
Give some kind of contra, we say, like, you know.
Confirmation?
Yeah, to be controversive or to doubt things. You're not
uh-huh.
supposed to believe the things right away.
Right.
So,
well, you can understand where that comes from.
Exactly.
A little bit.
Yes. So sometimes there are challenges when I teach Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
Or like also the second degree, you know, like, or even, you know, when they ask questions and there is no answer to the questions, but they want to know, you know, from their brain and rational and understand. So, yeah, but I'm so used now to being there that I understand, you know, the way they also think.
Uh-huh.
And it's, yeah, it's not so difficult. So going back to France was again a challenge because I had forgotten how the French really think, you know, when they
uh-huh.
Also, they analyze the things very much in their brain and they vocalize it a lot sometimes. And for the French, the difference is that they are very much afraid of sects.
Yes.
Yeah, and being caught by a sect. And also, they have this history with religion and the Catholic Church. So sometimes there are, well, challenges with that, you know, when I tell the history, that they sometimes don't feel happy with some part of the history.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes they don't feel too happy. You know, sometimes the setting is so, I mean, my organizer loves some rituals. So there are the pictures of the lineage, for instance, and there are candles. And I remember that a few times some of the participants were really not happy about that and said they didn't like having candles. Uh-huh. And I said, what's the problem? And they said, oh, no, this reminded them too much of church.
Uh-huh.
Also, I don't use incense, but one time this lady used incense, and there was a lot of reaction from the participants that was not okay, that was too much like church. And this group at that time had something against, you know, like they didn't want to have this kind of
feeling. Yeah.
So sometimes you have to be a bit sensitive about that. Uh-huh. And sometimes we have people coming from very, very different backgrounds. So you have people who are communist backgrounds. So for them, a candle and pictures, you know, like of gurus, etc., they felt very uncomfortable. And sometimes you have people who come to Reiki because they are attracted by something like a sect.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. In France, for instance.
What is this thing about sects in France?
I don't know. Sometimes
I just want to clarify this for the listeners. This is not S-E-X.
No,
sex,
no.
As in intercourse.
No.
This is sex. Sect. I'm not quite sure if I'm pronouncing it properly, but it's S-E-C-T-S. And what it means, for me anyway, as an American, is that it's a group of people that remove themselves from the general population and have a particular very strong belief system and cosmology, usually centered around one person who's like a prophet or has the ability to make decisions for the whole group. And then the whole group follows them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, of course, as with anything, there are some very famous ones where a certain sect goes and they do something like together that is socially not acceptable. And then there are other sects that are very beautiful and, you know, seem to benefit everyone. But we only hear about the, like, unbeneficial ones, non-beneficial, I should say.
Yeah.
So, what is the thing about sex in France? Is that because of a communist history, or?
No, I think it's because of our history, because of already the Qatar, you know, that it
way back.
Way, way, way back. So, there is both an attraction for belonging to a sect by many, many people would love to. To join a sect, actually. I mean, and it's what I see with some of the Reiki masters. I mean, in France, you have some who really are very charismatic and attract lots of people. They have hundreds of disciples, I would say. So it's not quite the same Reiki that that I would teach. But and they have a lot of followers and disciples. And they promise, of course, like healing and so on. So these kind of sectarian attitudes is very the government is watching it, you know.
They very are much
very
so.
Much
very much
a
so.
Lot and they get more press than other kind of Reiki, which are more quiet. So
right.
So there is some what I noticed in France is both the attraction from some people come to my class actually or came to my class looking for a guru, looking for somebody to tell them what to do, or looking for somebody to heal them, you know, like as if I had supernatural powers.
Uh-huh.
And so
what do you do when somebody says that?
Well, I tell them that they are responsible for themselves, and that I tell them about healing, how I see it, and that that they have to do the self-treatments, and healing takes different forms, and, you know, I tell them what I think about it. Excuse me. Uh-huh. And I'm very watchful not to be a guru, you know.
Right.
This is very, very, you know, it's an attraction, of course, because sometimes my students would love me and tell me how wonderful I am, etc., which is very pleasant.
Oh, yeah, it's always wonderful to hear that you're...
For a while. But I know the danger. But I see that, you know, there's this paradox. Some people are looking for... And some people also come into Reiki because they have such talents also. This is what the things that I have observed. And some people, for instance, a lot of in France, you have these, they pass it from mother to daughter or son, some
like
kind of abilities to cure, they say, to take away the sun, they say. You take away the sun is when you get burnt or sunburned.
Uh-huh.
Some people have the ability to cure that immediately.
Wow.
Oh, yes, yes.
It's
very fascinating, and it's true. I mean, I've seen that. And some people also cure the warts, you know, the warts.
Warts.
Warts. Also, like, they have learned that from their mom. Usually it's a kind of prayer that they do, and they do a little something. Or to cure the you know, zona, I don't know how you call that. This is around the belly that you have. You know, you get sort of itchy.
Like shingles?
Shingles, exactly, shingles. So you have people who can cure shingles immediately. And these kind of people come to take the Reiki class.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
And then so what happens?
Oh, no, it's just that they tell me that sometimes they believe that I must have that too. You know, like they say, oh, but I'm sure you know how to do that also. And I say, well, I do something with Reiki. And sometimes it takes a bit longer than them to cure, you know, like what? It does eventually, if it does, or sunburned, etc. But or people who already lay hands and cure people with their hands. But they've heard about Reiki, and they are quite happy actually to learn Reiki. And afterwards, they tell me how much difference it made for them to have this structure, to have this some kind of structure, some kind of way to relax also into something, into a system.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes also what they say is sometimes when they used to cure the people, they would get sick afterwards or very tired or something. And with Reiki, that was no longer the case. So I have more and more of this also in Germany, but mostly in France.
That's fascinating.
Or people who believe that I have some kind of, their imagination, and I don't think it's only their imagination. What I noticed is that they actually see that on the internet, but I don't read too much internet. I don't read any internet in France. I just get, you know, upset. But apparently in some of the internet pages or websites, they promise you things like, if you are possessed by the demon, by the devil, you can get free of it. Or if you have lost somebody dear, this person can help you get the love back from this person. So sometimes they believe that. So, they believe it only a while, and then I tell them it's not quite this. But mostly they stick to the class and remain and do it and discover something different.
Uh-huh. And what is that? What is that? What do they discover that's different then?
I think they get another. I hope. I don't know if it's always the case, but another approach to life and to a different philosophy. They get the principles, for instance, and we discuss about the principles, about what it means to them, etc. So. I don't know, but I guess they don't ask me anymore after the class. This I noticed, it was recently, you know, somebody said, oh, by the way, my cousin is possessed, or, you know, like next week I'll bring him to you so that you help him. And I said, oh, he's welcome to come a few times for Reiki treatments, but I'm not going to give him Reiki. and whatever happens happens, but it has nothing to do for me with, I'm not an expert in this kind of field. Uh-huh. I just tell them because it's not something that I promise or I want to do. I don't know how to do it. I just know that Reiki will help. That's it. So sometimes this, but sometimes it's a challenge for me.
Uh-huh. You know? Right,
also
for
what
sure.
they tell each other sometimes, you know, during the classes, and sometimes also how they express what they live in the initiation. You know, in Germany, people are sometimes not so vocal about it or more
intimate.
They're
more private.
More private, yeah.
Uh-huh.
But in France, what I notice is sometimes they wait for each other and they say, so, and you, what did you see? What did you hear? What did you... And they have
that
all kind of experiences.
That's so fascinating that they're really... because my experience of being in France in the student gatherings and so on is it's kind of scary for me because... Mm-hmm. Their analytical mind is so, like, it's different from the German mind, which is very strong in my experience. And I can't really vocalize the difference as an American, which mind doesn't come up too much in America. But the French, it's like they want to know, is this polarity? And if so, what is the theory behind it? And... you know, does this have anything to do with polarization or
magnetism?
And all it's kind of scientifically scientific based. And yet, on the other side, which is fascinating, is this tendency. Mm. Actually, it feels like within the culture, but also as a gift of the culture, that they are actually have like a doorway. Or a gateway into the part of a human being that actually extends way past mental into what we might call the psychic realm.
Absolutely.
Which is very strong, which is also a very strong mental gift.
Yes, yes.
Yes, and that's fascinating.
Yeah, we have both. We have this very mystic mysticism.
Yeah, that's true.
And sometimes it turns into superstition. And sometimes not. I mean, I don't know if it has to do with, you know, like the mixture of cultures, because we have North African, we have lots of African in France.
Right.
And Asian also. France has always been open. I mean, it's like, the USA also, but so we have the...
But this is a very older, this is an older mix, we could say.
Yes.
Yeah. And, wow, fascinating.
So it could be also the result of that.
Yeah.
And so I suppose it's like an inner challenge or struggle sometimes within the persons. And sometimes what I feel is that this rationalization, etc., is like a cover, not to feel too much, not to, you know, not to go too much into the intuition because it's prohibited
scary.
Or scary. So sometimes exactly these people are also open to, or some doors can open to very rational peoples.
Right, and
are completely different realms.
Uh-huh. Mm. So Reiki must give them, it sounds like, what happens is Reiki gives them another structure upon which they can lean and actually somehow use that as a container for gifts that, sometimes are difficult to talk about or to rationalize.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's what I feel. And also, what I see and I love in my French students is they take it seriously. I mean, they do self-treatment.
They practice
self-treatment. And, you know, like when I meet them 1, 2, or 3 years later, or my nephew, you know, like he's had Reiki now, I don't know, 12, 15 years. And he practices self-treatment every day, every night.
Wonderful.
You know, as a very natural thing to do.
That's wonderful.
Yes, yes.
Wonderful.
So this is very rewarding. I mean, like,
for a teacher, for sure. Very rewarding.
Yes. So when they take the class, somehow, it's my feeling that they are very serious about it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And what I like, of course, is in France, usually you know, when my organizer, where she lives, is more like a rural area, so people have to come from far away, and they stay overnight, and then they stay 2 or 3 days, and visit relatives, etc. So usually, we have the class, but after the class, we have lunch.
Oh, wow.
And lunch
in France is something else.
Yes.
Oh, wonderful.
So, you know, everybody brings something. So the first day, it's like still modest, you know, not too modest, but, you know, not for, well, for other countries, it would be more than abundant. But everybody brings something and they all eat together. And the second day, they bring even more because they've seen what the neighbor has brought or the others. And they say, oh, I know how to. And so sometimes they cook the whole afternoon or evening to bring the food for the next day. And this is, I mean, this is a real banquet. It's
wow.
Incredible.
By the fourth day,
well, yes,
you don't have breakfast.
No, but on the other hand, it's this social part,
wonderful,
which I like. It's like after this time, the people know each other.
Right.
At the beginning, the French are very shy about sharing intimate, sharing. So they are very careful. And at the beginning, there's also keep distance. You know, we have this you and you, the two different
right,
you.
Right.
And so for them, in Germany, immediately everybody would say the more familiar you, too.
Right.
They don't have too many problems with that. It doesn't matter how old they are or whatever. But in France, it's very difficult. If they are younger, they don't dare, they dare not say you to me, I mean the familiar you to me, because out of respect, you know.
Right.
And if they are older, they have never learned how to say it.
Right.
So sometimes, but I say the familiar you, go on, because I can't make differences. I forget, you know, who is the one, you know, I just...
That you don't know and
no.
The one that you
so
do
So for
know.
Me, I tell them in advance, I say, you know, you will have to excuse me, but I'm going, at least during these days, to say the familiar you to you, because I will put my hands on you and... And so it makes it easy, you know, easier for everybody. And so by the last day, most people then really call each other by first name. And,
oh, wonderful.
And have and sometimes, you know, they cry when they leave the class. Because
that's
they
wonderful,
feel like they found some kind of other family.
Uh-huh.
And they find it quite hard to go back, you know, to...
Right.
To the other life, yeah.
Wow, that's
so
amazing.
Sometimes it's really, yes, very, very touching.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Very beautiful.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about Germany.
Well, Germany, I like... Now, what I like is that the people are very serious.
Yes.
Also in a different way. Like, they will be very punctual and very correct. And sometimes... For them, you know, they will say the familiar you, etc. So on the one side, you have the feeling that there is not too much distance. But on the other hand, they are not used to touch each other's. You know, in France, we hug and we kiss.
Mm-hmm.
And you kiss everybody. You kiss everybody's friends and, you know.
Right.
So the French don't have too much problems to put the hands on. But in Germany, it's very difficult. So the first, you know, like putting the hands on the head. So sometimes they keep the hands in the air.
Uh-huh.
And I really have to tell them, you know, please, put down. I mean, and sometimes when they come back for evening or meetings, you know, after sometimes a month or years, and suddenly I see that they put the hands in the air. And I said, what are you doing? And I said, oh, it feels more comfortable like that.
Oh, I didn't realize that. That's interesting.
So sometimes it's out of, you know, shame or, you know, like being, don't want to touch somebody else because they feel it's not to respect. I don't know. So sometimes I have to tell them, you know, please put your hands on. And so I guess it has something to do with, you know, keeping distance and not being used to really hug.
Right.
Or you don't see people holding hands or too much. Or, well, you see some, but nobody, you don't kiss it.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that is one of the, maybe one of the differences. But what I like is, for instance, when I talk about the precepts, I usually take the time and ask them about their experience, you know,
right.
about when did they get angry and why,
right.
and we reflect uh-huh. about that. So the Germans have no problems to really tell you very intimate things, you know, when they got really angry or the worries that they have.
Right.
They go very quickly and deeply. And even and these are not people who are used to go to seminars or sharing, but they, when they open up, they open up. I mean, it's...
Yes.
And they are very open-hearted, and this I admire, or I love also
right.
them, you know.
Well, it's interesting because my experience is in Germany that this sort of physical boundary, well, I feel like for the most part, Germans are very aware of personal boundary issues.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they don't like to... it seems that in the German culture, to respect somebody else's personal space is very important.
Yes.
Like, for instance, if I go to a seminar in Germany, where you sit is very important.
Oh, yes.
Yes?
Yes.
And if you sit in somebody else's place, so you come back the second day, and that person expects that chair
to be
reserved for them.
Yes,
yes. And the same on the beach.
Yes.
You know, they have this little space on the beach and that's theirs.
Or in the sauna.
Right. which I think is very interesting. And I don't really know where that comes from, but it's fascinating for me as an American who's very chaotic about stuff like that and have gotten into a lot of interesting conversations
mm-hmm.
about that. And at the same time, there's a part of them where when they trust you,
mm-hmm.
then this
yes.
openness of feelings and heart really come out and are just shared with such beautiful tenderness and eloquence.
Yes.
I find their language
oh, yes.
really eloquent. And
yes.
it's amazing because it's such a kind of language.
Right.
But the expression that they have, a feeling, I think is
yeah, this
amazing.
Is one of the things that I...
Very beautiful
oh,
kind
yes.
of paradox.
Yeah.
yeah,
they have words to express feelings that are just not translatable. And sometimes it's not only the words that you cannot translate. I mean, we know that in the philosophy, Weltschmerz, and there are plenty of words that are just German. You can't... translate
right.
them into English or
right.
French. So,
right.
so the great philosophers have exported their, or also Freud, their own
right.
words. But sometimes it's also not only the words that are not translatable, but also the feelings. I mean...
They're very precise.
They're precise feelings.
Very precise about their feelings, yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes there are feelings that... that I didn't know before.
Well, you weren't aware of.
I was not aware of. Yes. There's something in German, you know, something nice happens to you.
Yeah.
I don't know, you win the lotto or something. Or no, something, well, something nice happens to you, and then somebody will tell you, ich gönne es dir. So... And at the beginning, I didn't understand. I tried to have, you know, it translated and so on. And it means something like, I allow you to have this nice event happening to you. So as if they were not even responsible, but, and Gönner is like a mecène, a mecène.
A messenger?
No, mécène is somebody who would pay the artists so that they could make mécénat.
Oh, wait. Gosh.
Missing? What's the name?
Not a mentor,
no.
but... Well, it happened in Italy a lot in the Renaissance.
Yes, in the Renaissance you had the kings and they would, you know, like...
they would be the artists...
Something. And so this feeling...
Sorry,
yeah.
listeners, we'll think of the word at some point in some language, but... Yeah.
Yeah, and sometimes the people do that with your feeling. So you have this feeling, and it's as if this feeling... As if they would allow you to have this feeling, and you wonder, you know, why do you want... What do you have to do with it?
Is it uh-huh.
So this is something I never understood, actually.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a kind... I still have somebody to, I need somebody still to explain it to me why. And usually what, when people told me that, you know, I, ich gönne es dir, I give it to you somehow. Actually, they didn't. They were not happy that I had this wonderful event happen to me. But they pretended they were happy. So this is something really strange. So sometimes, it's just one example, a bit out of the...
But as a specific feeling.
As a specific feeling. And sometimes, so for me, I have to translate so many things into a different culture. And although I live so many years in Germany, I still am not a German.
Right.
And I'm still, you know, like wandering sometimes. And it's I will never be able to get that, never. Because right. I've not been raised with the folk songs or, you know, the whatever. I've been raised in a different culture.
Right, right. So interesting.
Yeah.
Well, one of the things I loved about the German culture, about the German language, is that as they translate it back into English, when they don't say, I've had this experience, they say, I made this experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that, for me, was so beautiful. It was like ownership of an experience where, however it happened to me, whether the piano fell on my head out of the blue or whatever, it's like, I made this experience. Or if something, you know, in our esoteric world, we could say, well, of course, we create all of our life experience, right? Yeah. But they take it to everything. And that was one of the things that I really appreciated, were these little places in the German language where they are very clear about their own boundaries and who is responsible for what. So I'm really interested in what you were saying before about them saying something about, like, I'm grateful, you know, I'm glad you had this experience and I gave it to you somehow. And I don't know, it'll be interesting to explore that more.
Yeah.
But what I found in the German, students that I had was that they were really interested in the system.
Yes, yes.
So a lot of people, like they, somehow you show them the hand positions, and they don't quite, they feel like they can't remember it. And that was also true with a lot of the Germans. And they, in the early days, they always used to bug me. I call it bug because I didn't have a good answer for it. They always wanted to have a manual or something written down so that they wouldn't forget the system. Okay. And what I realized was it wasn't about the lack of their, it wasn't their insecurity about their ability, but it was their preciseness of remembering.
Yes.
And that they really wanted to be precise in their remembering.
Mm-hmm.
And if they couldn't remember it, then they wanted it on paper.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of the German students that I had were frustrated with me because I never gave them the paper. But I also gave them a challenge, which is, you cannot do Reiki wrong.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And for them, that possibility of not being wrong ever was so new.
Yes. Yeah.
Excuse me. And really pointed out to me how I was thinking, because I had that same thought. I just never knew it.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Excuse me.
But this is also in France would be the same. They all come and they arrive and they have paper and pens and they believe they are supposed to have them, you know, because this is cool. And at school, you learn everything by heart. You have to learn things by heart and repeat them by heart. So this is the way you are supposed. And there is a lot of stress, you know. And you don't help your neighbor because there is a lot of competition in France, at least. This is how I was raised. So for the second degree, what I noticed, it was very difficult to teach a second degree to more than one person alone. One person alone is no problem. They're not so stressed learning the symbols and the names. But you put two or three, and they start competing.
Really?
Yes. Or at least even they don't even, not in maybe an open way, you know, like more subtle. But there will always be one who gets so desperate because he doesn't get or she doesn't get it as quickly as the others, that they stress so much. They are so stressed out that they get blank, you know, like, get under this, and they have this really like a traumata from school.
Right.
I call that, you know, can't be anything else. So usually we treat them first.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's really hard for lots and lots of students everywhere to, create or be able to accept the concept of beginner mind.
Yes.
And, that's really important. But I can see that in France, that this is really an interesting
concept. It's a completely different school system. You know, you have the teacher in front. It's very frontal teaching still. And you are supposed to take it in and give it, you know, and be as quick as possible and as exact as possible and perfect. So sometimes people, you know, even if they are 60 years old, they fall back into this being a bad student again,
or
a good student, you know.
Right.
So that's funny. This is interesting also to observe.
And what are the gifts that you've received from these cultures?
Oh, plenty of gifts. I guess... Yeah, first maybe the healing within myself, also the history of my family.
Mm-hmm.
You know, healing all these different bad events in the wars, or the past history, I would say, between the races and the cultures, and completely different views over the world, different sense of humor.
Right.
Which is very, very different in France.
Very different.
Or in Germany or in other countries. Culturally, mentally, emotionally, so many different things that I would never have become if I had stayed in the same place my whole life. So I am very grateful for all this. And also the language. I love language. I mean, today I'm not at my best form, but with language and being very coherent because I have a cold. But this is so rich, you know. I also teach in Spanish when I can, or other languages, and rediscovering, you know, it's the same. What I teach it's the same. I mean, I have this structure also. I have the same thing to pass on, the precepts, etc. But every time I go into another language, another culture, it opens up other realms of gratitude and of love, you know, and of compassion.
Right.
Also,
right.
I was not so compassionate when I was younger. I used to be quite ironical and not very pleasant. And I think this is what has Reiki and teaching Reiki given me. And also feeling how much similar we are on one hand, and how fascinating and how unique each one of us is.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
So appreciating all these different things, all the different ways of thinking, you know. Sometimes I really have to translate into my head also and my heart what is happening. You know? So, but it's, you wouldn't know that, I mean, more than I do.
Yeah, but you know, I the one language that I had made some attempt to learn was German, because when I went over there in the early 1980s, I really realized how connected I was to the German land, the actual land mass, and to the language. I had no idea why, and we might talk about past lives, and I really believe that I had something that was connected to me in around the Hamburg area. So when I was there, I was always wanting to be there more, so I ended up taking some German lessons. And as I created and grew into these German lessons, I realized that I was getting to know the culture of Germany as well.
Yeah.
And that was really neat, because their language is well, on some level, so systematic. And people would say, but it's really difficult to learn German. And I would think, well, I don't know. The language seems much more logical than English. I mean, yeah. English just is a mess.
Yes.
And, you know, in German, there are often these words that, you know, if you want to make a new word, you just put words together like building blocks, and mm-hmm. they just mean a new thing, you know. But what I realized the difficulty was is the preciseness.
Mm-hmm.
And that I will never have. Mm-hmm. Even if I was really super fluent in German, I don't think that I would have the preciseness of feeling or the way of using that precise word to describe a precise event, mm-hmm. a kind of event, you mm-hmm. know? And that, for me, is somehow the gift of their culture and their language, is that they have these eyes and these ears to hear such subtle differences and to feel such subtle differences.
Yes.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I was in France, I was always terrified because they would ask me questions quite often that I had no idea what they were asking me,
yes.
one. And secondly, I had no idea how to answer them.
I remember
yeah.
once I had to translate somebody, you know, there was this big gathering. And the person started the sentence, blah, 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 blah. And I was, you know, my mouth was open, and I just looked at the person, and I had no idea. It was such a long sentence, and I had no clue what they had said. So I said, can you start again? And it was terrible because it made no sense. It was like a series of, you know, words, and I could not. So, but you were very good. You said, you know, can make short sentences, all as, you know, like the way you say, you try to find out what do they want to know, really.
Right.
So sometimes it's very difficult. And sometimes there are concepts that also I don't understand with the French. I mean, like the French masters, they have this kind of...
like a mix of esoteria.
Yes.
And mental concepts that
yeah.
Because I don't know them.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't have the background of reading and so on. I have no idea what they're talking about. So they just... it feels like intellectually somehow they have a preparation that I don't have. And so
yeah.
that used to freak me out. And they don't take "I don't know" for an answer. That is not an okay answer in France.
No, no. No, no. But in France they also have this notion of power. Like
uh-huh.
So sometimes they would accuse each other, so the masters, you know, that they are misusing their power. And this is something I never understood, you know, which power, what are they talking about? And this is very French. I mean, I don't hear that in other cultures, you know, so much.
Fascinating.
Yes. So this is something I still need to inquire, and I will tell
right.
you what it
means. So all of you listeners who are in France, you now get to let Beatrice know about what this means.
Yes, please.
And, you know, that's one of the just fantastic things about teaching Reiki, is that I feel like Reiki takes you to the place that is challenging, because that challenge is exactly what we need
mm-hmm.
in our lives.
Yeah, right.
So I trust that your teaching in France and Germany, going back and forth, is really Reiki saying, you still have something to learn here.
Oh, yes, yes.
And that the students are giving you your challenge, which is great.
Yeah, I hope I live 50 more years.
Good
I want
you.
To learn.
Good for you. And that at the same time, it's so exciting, I think might be the word, to realize that the gift of Reiki is given in Germany, in France, in Argentina, in Spain, wherever you are. It's given in the same way.
Yes.
And somehow it has this ability to create an understanding of our humanity.
Yes, absolutely. You said it very well.
Yes.
Thank you for this.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for sharing your experiences and also how it applies to you and your own life.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Yeah, it's wonderful. And I just want to say that, you know, in my years in Germany were at the very beginning of my mastership and also as being recognized as a lineage bearer. And the Germans taught me a lot of very hard lessons, and they did it in such a loving way and in such a way that I really understood. So I really want to appreciate the German community, number one, for putting up with me, because I must have been like an elephant in a china shop, being an American and kind of not knowing any of the subtleties. And yet they, you know, they accepted that part. And at the same time, I feel like really gave me with great love some of my really solid, important lessons of my life as a master. Mm. And that was really good. And out of that, I really have great love and appreciation for all cultures.
Mm.
Because they taught me a lot.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Beatrice.
Thank you, Phyllis, too.
And thank you, listeners. And we'll be back next week with another master and another round of stories from culture to culture. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.